και αυτή τη στιγμή είναι κάτι. Λέτε, Βίτι, εντό, Τιμ, εντό, Honorable Members, εντό, I can't see the other people, and the members from the housing support institutions, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to welcome you this afternoon on the, I wouldn't say it's the first inter-election meeting, because 2 days ago we had a vibrant inter-election between ourselves, the committee and the department. Therefore, we just would like to welcome you, and we are appreciating the response that we get from the department, and we wish to say as the portfolio committee, we are committed to work together with the department and any other institution that is driving the interest of housing. And we want to say, as we are committed to work together with the department, we are also urging that cooperation from the department. More especially, we know that we are working under pressure in Parliament, and we have to call before the committee, call yourselves before the committee. So we would like you to cooperate, because sometimes we might say, because of urgency, we might call you in such a, can give you such a short notice. And secondly, we would like to say up front that as much as we respect each other's mandate, and we are committed to work together in not in a confrontational manner, but we must cooperate and respect each other. And secondly, we will do our best to ensure that we use the systems that are there for us and the platforms that are there. And I think our mandate is clear, is to ensure that the electorate receives the proper and the services they deserve. So we have got a common goal, both of us, the committee and the department itself. And I think in NSX, when we met for the past 2 days, as I was saying, that we had a vibrant deliberation, we understood that there's still a lot to be done within the department itself. But as President normally says, working together, we can do more. We believe on that. And the only thing we can say for now is to say the committee is ready to get its hands. Hence the president has called, has made a call already, and direct, and pointed out the direction. So we are ready to direct to get our hands, and we hope the department is ready. With those few words, I would like to welcome you all in this meeting. But I think we had an invitation to the minister, because we believe that we invited the minister, the deputy minister, and the DG, but now we don't see the minister, we don't know, because we believe the threat, I mean this party vote, is very much important that he leads. But we don't say, we will hear from you if you say any apology from that side. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. And we thank you for the opportunity that you give to the department to present the first plan before you. And I would thank all the stakeholders that are here, including the housing institutions that are here. Well, if I'm here, the minister is here. That's why in the department is for deputies. I know. And if he comes, it's a bonus. But we are here to listen. And we are here to say to you, working together we can do more. So we'll head over to the department, and we appreciate the kind of enthusiasm that has been displayed by all parties in terms of housing delivery. And we hope with the kind of cooperation that we're going to develop, we'll move forward in fast-tracking the housing delivery. We're here with you, and thank you, Chairperson. I'll hand over to the DG to do the work. Thanks.
Thank you very much, as a member of the committee. We are indeed happy that the committee, through you, Chairperson, appreciate the submissions we made to the committee for 2 days, that is Monday and Tuesday, and where we were trying to take you through the policy environment within which we are operating. And I'm sure my team must have also took you through our human settlement atlas, be it where houses are built and or where informal settlement exists, where services are and where the unservices. But we are very glad that it was a success, as you said, Chairperson, and we'll continue to make ourselves available to the committee at all material times. Chair, our presentation, really, this is the structure of our presentation. I will give a broad overview, sort of scanning the environment in terms of where we are now. We will just reflect briefly on the housing sector priorities. My COO, Mr. Lishabani, next to me here, will take the committee through those three areas: our strategic objectives, the structure, the people use of this and function, and plan activities of this year, that is 2009-2010, and Mr. Tabanji will take the committee through budget analysis. Let me just hasten to say that that we have our elections in the middle of the year this year, so everything is really sort of packed, that is the budget debate and so forth. But as we take you through our plan, we will also want to raise a point that this plan is based on the last MTF, medium-term strategic framework. That is the last mandate government, that is the 2004-2009. We will be going into a process where we will reflect on the current mandate of the current government, which is 2009-2014, out of which we will develop our own 5-year plan, and of course every year we will be presenting to yourselves as a committee annual plans. Just to scale the environment, Chair, I'm sure you're aware, as a committee, that this department has been renamed the Department of Human Settlement, which in itself is much broader than housing. Housing is but a small component of what we are expected to do, and of course it's reflected in the medium-term strategic framework. That was before the cabinet Lokota residency, and of course, which also informed the state of the nation address for the next 5 years. as it was presented by the president. So we are busy trying to work out those functions, those responsibilities that rest with other departments, which has got to come to this department, Human Settlement Department, going forward. So recall some of you who were in the previous parliament, and in 2004-2009, you recall that we've always been raising the issue about the alignment of funds, the alignment of planning that is between NIC, sanitation, and so forth to Human Settlement. So we are seeing the new naming has forced us in the situation whereby we must begin to look at those functions that need to be harvested into Human Settlement and ensure that there is alignment and proper integrated creation of sustainable Human Settlement. The issues of alignment, of course, I spoke about that, alignment of funding, but also alignment of plans. Of course, the whole issue of meeting our Millennium Development Goals of eradication of informal settlement by 2014 is one of the strategic issues that we are committed going forward. And I think the reconfigured department will help us to realize that in a very focused manner. Our broad housing priorities, which obviously arises out of the mandating political party, as it were, include the issue around housing for military veterans. It's a task that we have concluded broadly at the policy level. We are engaging organizations that are involved in the defense to try to finalize the more issues, but we are ready to implement that. We are also have prioritized intervention in the housing industry, particularly to deal with the issues of the costs for construction materials, the legislation to prevent the mushrooming of informal settlement. We are committed to that, and I'm sure members are aware of two landmark court cases. One that focuses on the Abashale Basum John Dolo, or which was brought by the Abashale Basum John Dolo, that is in KZN, and of course the one that was released by the Constitutional Court yesterday. Obviously, there is some work that we'll be doing to develop a broader overarching legislation which will allow provinces to develop their own to strengthen and regulate the mushrooming of informal settlement. The fourth priority is, of course, to increase affordable rental stock in the light of ongoing migration patterns that sort of put strain in several metros and secondary cities across the country. The question around central planning, of course, which will enhance the whole issue of implementation of human settlement as our new mandate. The restructuring of funding mechanisms is also our fifth priority area. We have successfully implemented the strategic priority number 7, which is the establishment of the Housing Development Agency up and running, and I'm sure members will be interacting with the leadership of that institution. The priority number 8, that of a one-off injection for human settlement for housing. We did make a bid to Treasury in the last financial year, but of course, I'm sure members are aware that the economy currently is not that much healthy, but we'll continue to ensure that we raise the matter of increasing allocations for human settlement, generally, not necessarily housing. So this will be a few of those issues that I thought I should, in broad terms, try to raise with the members. Mr. Alishabani will then be dealing with the other the branch activities. And as I said earlier, Mr. Alishabani will deal with the budget analysis. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will just briefly sketch the planned activities within the program to the department. In terms of the three-year plan, the departmental objectives remain to accelerate the delivery of housing and integrated inner settlement, as well as using housing delivery as a catalyst for job creation, along with ensuring access to residential programs. The fourth strategic objective is to achieve or rather promote social cohesion and improve the quality of life in our settlements. Lastly, the streamlining of alternative technologies and innovative planning for sustainable human settlements remains a priority, primarily given in the light of growing concerns around climate change. Having said that, Madam Chair, the department structure in the administration remains with the five programs. I will get into those details separately. We are fortunate to have an expanded ministry with a minister and deputy minister. That said, the details have already talked about some of these considerations, but the committee, for a while, the department branch structure as well as the budget structure were not aligned. It was a matter of time lag between restructuring and then the budgeting process. We can confirm that that has been achieved in this year, but also the five-year strategic plan, as the DG has indicated, from now going forward to 2014, is to be finalized in the course of the next 3 months or so. While the plan that we present today, the activities are those that are in line with the budget vote, the estimate of national expenditure as published, but also emanating from the three-year plan that is already approved. Madam Chair, the programs are as follows. Program one, what we generally call administration, attending to ministry, the Director General's office, and corporate services, clearly provide strategic leadership as well as administrative and management support services. In addition to the ministry, the sub-programs are as follows, the executive support services, internal audit, risk management, and special investigations, the HR, corporate support, legal services, and information technology and systems form part of this program. As a way of highlight, we took it that the committee would be interested in matters of special investigations. Mm-hmm. We just highlighted there what the planned activities are for the year, continuing with the anti-corruption policy and strategy, the implementation thereof, updating all the cases that are before us, intensifying awareness around fraud and corruption. Of all the investigations that are undertaken, the priority is to ensure the appropriate reporting and closure of those cases, as well then as the various work around investigations with the SIU. Moving on, Madam Chair, in respect of Program 2. Program 2 relates to policy and research, that's the branch. The branch has a purpose to develop and promote sustainable human settlements and housing policies, obviously informed by research, as well as undertaking to the monitoring of our programs. The branch is structured along three chief directorate sub-programs, policy, research, as well as monitoring and evaluation. Insofar as planned activities in respect of the policy environment, the promotion of the revised national code would be a priority. along with the farm worker housing policy, the enhancements there, the enabling tools, inclusionary housing policy, members would have been briefed somewhat. That's to take that process forward. The modeling of provinces and municipalities in respect of their translation of policy, as well as the interpretation or implementation advice in respect of policy for various agents. What will continue is really the development and management of policy, including periodic refinements along the way. As emphasis shifts, this is the area that will attend to that. In respect of our monitoring work, the quality management aspects are priority. The monitoring and evaluation of the delivery system insofar as planning, implementation, as well as performance remains key, as well as the impact assessment of our programs, as well as the audit of products that we deliver alongside the occupancy audit. The occupancy audit really to ascertain the degree to which in primary or initial beneficiaries move on in respect of the houses that they benefited. Insofar as research is concerned, we continue undertaking research on various aspects of sustainable unit settlement, providing support around research work overall and the coordination thereof across the sector and the dissemination of the products. The questions around innovation have to be undertaken or rather looked at through the lens of applied research, as well as establishing and appreciating the trends in the macro and microeconomic environment that impact upon us. Moving on to program three, that relates to housing planning and delivery support. This is a fairly new branch in the department. It's in its second year of operation. The branch is established to provide implementation and delivery support, build capacity, and liaise with various stakeholders for in the sector. That said, the branch is really structured along the lines of the various sub-programs, rental and community-driven housing initiatives, that's PHP, human settlement planning, program implementation support, stakeholder mobilization, capacity development, as well as priority project facilitation. Insofar as the functions that are outlined in the slide, I will not get into that except that the sub-program titles speak for themselves. Just a highlight of some of the planned activities insofar as rental housing and PHP is concerned, the continuing growing of the pipeline of projects in provinces remains a key area to grow the sector, along with the development management and support to the implementers across the rental program. Similarly, we would undertake the same for the people's housing processes. We will also be operationalizing the oversight arrangements for the rental housing amendments, but also the Social Housing Act requires certain regulatory arrangements to be in place. We'll also support rental tribunals across provinces. In terms of capacity development, our training program will continue to enhance our skills alongside securing the sector capacity. Stated differently, is to assemble capacity to enable us to do the things that are required in the sector. But also the professional development of the sector becomes key, given the myriad of professional practices that contribute in delivering human settlement. Insofar as program implementation support, primarily we will continue to support provinces and municipalities to diminish the number of block projects, similarly preempting and avoiding further projects being blocked by supporting them at the design of their programs, along with the upgrading of informal settlements. These are massive programs. I'm just giving the highlights. Insofar as planning is concerned, the framework that exists We'll continue to maintain those, along with the facilitating the application of provincial multi-year housing plans and planning to inform the national housing development plan. And of course, that requires support across the various actors, across government, but also there are various coordinating fora in which planning alignment is to be achieved. Stakeholder liaison and management really seeks to foster partnerships with stakeholders outside of government. The recognition of the good practices will be pursued through the Government Vacant Housing Award. The priority programs, women in housing, youth in housing, we will continue to upscale those, as well as sustaining sector-wide dialogue in respect of structuring the engagement with the sector stakeholders. Insofar as priority project facilitation is concerned, we will continue to support the implementation of key national priority projects. The N2E Gateway project is one, Zanembula project is the other. Hutong, the resettlement initiatives there, will pursue those. There are other priority projects around 11 in number. The significance of these priority projects is that they begin to sketch a different practice and approach to human settlement at scale, but also sharpening the implementation tools that are available. Madam Chair, going forward in respect of Program 4, that relates to housing development funding, that's the CFO's office. It exists to fund national housing and human settlement development programs in terms of the Act, but also provide financial and grant management support across the department. The functions there, besides financial administration, supply chain management, they also provide grant management services, as well as ensuring that housing finance is available and accessible equitably. I indicated these sub-programs. The priorities or planned activities for the year, these are standard financial services, are standard in the department across government, financial support, internal controls and compliance, issues of financial statements and reporting and accounting and so forth. These are standard and they continue. Grant or fund management sub-program, again, this oversees the housing grant, the integrated housing and human settlement development grant, and therefore all the requirements in respect of the grant are managed, administered here, including facilitating the business plans, the project programming that provinces have to undertake. Finance equity, housing finance equity, really here we are seeking through this sub-program to keep an eye over the lending patterns by financial institutions. Obviously, the primary objective is to diminish discriminatory practices in that regard. The home loans and mortgage disclosure act requires that we establish the secretariat. And therefore, the analysis in respect thereof is what this sub-program will be undertaking, along with the engagement in the financial services charter process. Lastly, the last program, program 5, relates to strategy, sector relations and government. That's the Office of the Chief of Operations. Among the several sub-programs, intergovernmental relations and international relations is one priority. Housing institutions, governments and their oversight is another function. Management information services to manage the flow of data and so forth is what is another function in the program, as well as communication services in this regard. Just highlights of what is planned going forward. Intergovernmental relations, a little point of emphasis is to appreciate intergovernmental relations being across the three spheres, but at the same time being across the various sector departments. And therefore, we will continue to facilitate and strengthen the work in this area. is what ultimately makes human settlement possible in terms of alignment, coordination, and so forth. So besides the municipal accreditation program, the inter-sphere framework in the department, that's what we'll be strengthening in its implementation. The interdepartmental liaison has taken an added significance in this area. Our objectives in this regard being to achieve sector alignment across various policy, funding, programming initiatives, the cluster system in government, that will be the focal point in this regard. Again, there are various IGR fora in which the department participates. In so far as international relations is concerned, our program internationally is to be informed by the ministry, international cooperation, and therefore what we have at the moment is to continue managing those relations that exist. There are bilateral and multilateral engagements. AMCUD, that's the African Ministerial Conference on Housing and Urban Development. World Development Forum, India, Brazil, South Africa, trilateral cooperation, that's what we'll be pursuing. There are various other bilateral cooperation, DRC, potentially Angola, Cuba. There are a lot of Cuban technical professionals in the country. Again, there are various action plans in respect of our cooperation with the Dutch government, the upgrading of informal settlements, the support withdrawing from the Cities Alliance, energy efficiency projects, the Slum Dwellers Federation, social movements that we are touching base and collaborating with. Again, the management of donor funding for various programs, we will then be able to framework all of those. Institutions oversight, the committee will benefit from the specific presentations by various institutions tomorrow. However, the department undertakes the institution's performance reviews to see to their compliance with their mandate, their financial performance, as well as program delivery consideration. Of course, good governance in these institutions is of primary concern. Board functioning, systems reviews and audits, compliance to mandate are some of the things that we look at. We will finalize the closure of Tudelisha, SEFCON, and Social Housing Foundation. I know the next presentation deals with that in particular specifically. The establishment of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority is what we'll pursue and bring to conclusion in this financial year. The review of development finance institutions is again another priority in this area. Management information services, in a nutshell, we administer various data banks and databases that are able to provide us with different perspectives around the various trends, progress that is being made, and so forth. Communication services, our interface with the media, the public information, dissemination of information, in particular consumer awareness, public empowerment initiatives. These are taking a new level of significance in respect of the need to better communicate and empower residential property occupants with the best possible information for them to respond and interact with this economic downward spiral. This is the era where defaulting on mortgages increases, and therefore people need to be empowered accordingly to respond in particular ways. Again, the internal communications function remains. The strategic management, where strategy is developed, organizational planning and coordination, performance monitoring is undertaken, as well as our transformation sub-program continue to be operational. Madam Chair, the just a quick analysis. My colleague has so it seems that I just proceed with the presentation in respect of the finance, the budget side. The budget vote
I just think get clarity as to when we're going to stop for questions, and is this not an ideal place to actually deal with the one portion of this presentation and then go on to the other, or are we going to wait until the end of the chairperson?
Thank you very much. You were so proactive, otherwise our dark going to stop them there. So I think the proper process we have to follow is to start by interacting with the first presentation, and then when you get to the financial matters, we'll continue. Thank you. I think it's over to you, members. It's your time to engage the department. I'm disadvantaged, yes. Because I was supposed to be there, but because of the presentation, but you will bear with me. Honorable Gorman, to be followed by Honorable Stain. Is there any other hand for now?
Thank you, Chairperson. DJ, nice to meet you, and thank you for your presentation. We've already had very good interaction these last couple of days, but obviously not nearly enough this tremendous amount, especially for those of us who've come here on the committee. I just want, there is a recurring theme here, and that is the monitoring and support and all of that side. Now, my understanding is that we have these two new agencies, and that as a portfolio committee, as a department, we are wanting to assist now that we meet the requirements of delivery, of good quality housing, and also quick delivery, so that we're delivering quicker on our mandate, as particularly as the ANC. I want to know, with those agencies, because from what I can make out, and we're going to get onto the budget side, there seems to me to be quite a big jump in the budget, and I'm assuming it's to take care of trying to get this delivery on the ground. And I want to know, just from a practical point of view, these agencies, you know, I can't in my mind wrap my mind around a department now coming in with all this monitoring and this, you know, to make sure that things are happening on the ground. And I'd just like a little bit of clarity on those agencies and how they're going to work and if they're going to be on the ground near to municipalities, because we know that this is where the weaknesses are, you know, in those, between those spheres of government and their interaction.
Honorable,
thank you, Chairperson. You do give direction in terms of whether we're going to go program by program. So I'm going to ask a range of questions across the program, if you don't mind. Let me just firstly, because the Deputy Minister was absent in the House the other day, just extend certainly my congratulations to her in a position. I think it's going to be to our advantage. She was on this side of the committee, so she knows exactly the frustrations that we've had with the department, and hopefully she's going to address them. Chairperson, I want to go immediately into the beginning of this, and the presenter indicated, he made a statement, and he spoke about the alignment of functions. Now, it's something that we as a committee for certainly the last 2 or 3 years have been bringing up in our committee meetings, and it's a pity that it has to take what I suspect, the renaming of the department in order to get them to focus on the alignment. And I'm not sure if purely but then by renaming the department obviously is going to achieve that outcome. But I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt, and we shall see. What I'm interested in terms of some sort of information, and I appreciate that this is a broad overview, but
For example, in terms of priority, there's legislation to prevent the mushrooming of insects. Now, the fact of the matter is we do have such legislation, which do have unintended consequences, and I'm referring to the Fire Act, and it hasn't really achieved what we intended, rather the opposite. So what else do you envisage we're going to do from a legislative point of view? Because municipalities simply don't react when residents inform them timeously that there's the possibility of an informal settlement mushrooming. So they've got that window period within which to do something, otherwise they can't, they've got to go through the whole expensive exercise. So what really can we do, what more can we do other than enforce what we currently have? Then I would very much have liked to have heard more about the interventions that the department envisaged to curb spiraling costs of construction, for example, and input prices. I can't really see how that can be done through regulation. So if they've got some magic way of doing it, then I would like to hear about it. Then I'm going to skip some, Chairperson, because I know we need to carry on. The thing that I'm particularly interested in as well, and perhaps it's not the forum today, but we have, again in the committee, spoken about what impact that housing has both economically and in terms of job creation. I know it's very difficult to measure, but we're talking now about one of our objectives, utilizing housing delivery as a catalyst. That surely was an objective in 94 when housing started. Don't we have any anecdotal data that we can use as a benchmark that we can compare? Chairperson, I'm on to the next program. The monitoring and evaluation, which again has been a bugbear, Deputy Minister, you'll know of this committee. Is there going to be a definite, and again it may be too early to ask, sort of line of communication interaction with the planned ministry in the presidency, where they're going to be doing some monitoring and evaluation? There, and we heard something over the last 2 days about the occupancy audits, which has gone somewhere. And some of these questions can't be answered now. Hopefully you will give us a report on it sometime. I'd like to know what the conclusions, in terms of the audit that has been done already, and I forget what percentage has been done, but what are the conclusions from that particular audit? Is it 10% of people that's in the houses that shouldn't be there? That sort of information. I'm going to once again skip something and get to the more. Yeah, two things that I want to address that is perhaps somewhat new. One of them is the Governor Becky Awards. We've been fortunate to attend one or two of those. And while there were some outstanding candidates, the provinces as a whole don't participate in this. And in some cases, certainly to my mind, I have found that the people that have put there to be nominated are actually doing nothing more than what is expected of them. And it's almost like we're then giving awards for mediocrity. I would imagine that we'd want to give some people awards for doing something outstanding, over and above what's expected from them. And I find that lacking in the some of the people, I must say, that are being nominated for these awards. And the last thing of a general nature, Chairperson, the department has spoken about trying to use new technology and environmental friendly technology and so on. We're still lacking somewhat behind in applying that technology. But I think more importantly, I want to put this to the Ministry, Deputy Minister in particular. Is the department doing anything, or do they envisage doing anything to offset the carbon footprint of the department and its employees? Because I think, something like that needs to start with us as leaders before we can actually go out there and ask it from everybody else. So in terms of being concerned about our environment, what is this department doing to offset their carbon footprint? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think I must add to the questions that have been asked by the honorable members. Mine is about the establishment of SRA. Here we are hearing that we are still going to establish SRA, and according to us, this I think we do have the legislation in place, and the budget was allocated in the last financial year. to establish this. So we want to know why it is not yet established in this current period. And then the second one is about the consumer awareness program. You know, we will have extensive debate yesterday about this consumer awareness program. That the coordination, we are not very much happy about the coordination of this program. We rely too much to the provinces and the municipalities, and there's nothing wrong on that. We have to do that in terms of intergovernmental relations. But we need to see the efforts of the department itself. Because you know, when you get to the municipalities, there are policies that are going there. There are agendas, and you'll find that the community is not informed about this program. People will just call certain individuals, and you'll find that the majority of people are not part of that. And the when they are popularizing or the coordination of that event, it's not properly informed. They just call people, and then people, when they get out, just take an example of the last event, whereby you're having that roadshow, the last roadshow department head. You know, the people were called, not informed about what is going to happen there, what should they expect, and they were called to on the day of the activity. And then, because there are politics, a group of people went there, because they have got another an issue in their minds, and then when they get there, they found it, and then there was just nothing. They said, well, how could you do, give us, bring us all, but the way they did it was not nice, because they couldn't understand what was going on there, because the municipality could not properly give the information to the people. So we would like to see the effort of the department to ensure that these things are properly done. And then the second point is about the policies. We have said that there are policies here, farm dwellers policy is ready, and then we have heard that the national code is there, is ready, but I think we are requesting this policy for several times and we have never seen this policy. And the last one is about the international agreements. In terms of Africa, we have to get those international agreements. They have to be brought forward to the committee, but we have never received such an international agreement. So I think those are the issues that I wanted to raise.
Sorry, I just want to add on to something that has already been said.
We are going to have another.
It's related,
no. We are going to have another round. Honorable Masisi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is based on page 4, where the DC spoke of housing for military veterans.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I was saying I want to touch where the DG spoke about the housing cover for military veterans. I just want to know how are they going to do it, and maybe to clarify me on that point. Again, on page 17, where they talk about the priority project facilitation. They mentioned other priorities, but they also talked of 11 other priority projects. I want to be clarified on that one because it's just vague. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I will deal with some of the questions, and my colleagues will take others. We will spare the Deputy Minister for now because we are really reorientating, and we said to her that, you know, Deputy Minister,
is the time that you must ask some questions that you have been asking. Well, thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. The issue around the monitoring and evaluation providing support and of course agency certainly the comments and questions raised by honorable member for me. I think what we are trying to do, and I think this is a matter that has always been raised by the committee in the last parliament, that as a department we've got to check up our monitoring and evaluation, because housing is a concurrent function. There have always been previously an attitude in the Department of Housing of saying that our responsibility is to secure funding from Treasury, allocate funding to provinces, develop policies, and then provinces must account and so forth. And more often than not, projects that houses that have been built tended to be of bad quality. Now, unfortunately, when I became a DG in 2006, I found myself in hot water because I had to account for other things that I might have committed in my previous life, to account on bad projects. And of course, members of the committee then raised sharply the issue of what is it that you are doing as the Department of Housing to provide that necessary monitoring and evaluation, because at the end of the day, the housing grant is issued in your name, not in the name of provinces. So we then felt that we needed to create this monitoring and evaluation at the level of the chief director, to give an overall oversight effectively on the ground on every project that is taking place across the country. We have about 7,000 running projects throughout the country. So that is very massive. We are also mindful of the skills level at municipal level, particularly in providing inspectorate for subsidized houses. You know, people tend to look at the houses that are being built by the private sector and make sure that those houses meet the requirements of the building regulations. But when it comes to government subsidized houses, you know, municipalities, and of course it's because of capacity. And so our monitoring and evaluation is going to, it's in existence now, providing that overall capacity to provinces and municipalities. We are strengthening that through creation of inspectorates, because one of the critical issues in South Africa is that we don't have enough housing inspectors. Hence the issues of the poor quality. We try to bring NHDRC on board to help to provide that oversight, but indeed there are challenges, and therefore what we are trying to do to strengthen our work and to make sure that there is value for money is to build inspectorate within the monitoring and evaluation, which inspectorate is going to be attached to municipal provinces and so forth. So agencies that we have, I think there are about 6 or so, because we are closing 2 of them, they are historical, and I'm sure they'll be making their presentations tomorrow. Most of them, except of course I think one, arose out of the Busavelo Accord of 1994, where government and the private sector committed themselves to house the nation. I think the minister there was Minister George Lobo. And there were certain things that needed to be done by government to meet his side of the bargaining stick. And obviously the private sector had to do something as well. So some of these institutions were created to harmonize housing delivery in the country. And because there were townships that were, not townships that were being, you know, replied by the banks and so forth. So we had to create these institutions to harmonize that, to make sure that housing market is stabilized, and that, you know, the private sector will come back and invest in the townships and so forth, which I think I can say with a fair amount of, with no, you know, fear of contradiction, that I think we are achieving that because of types of settlements that are emerging, and Ishan Krishna and so forth. So some of those institutions were created to deal with the what was crisis in housing in South Africa post-94, and we are facing them out because we think that they have outlived their mandate. To Venice and Subcon are one of two of those. And obviously, some of their functions which we think are critical going forward have been transferred to Housing Development Agency. Oh yes. Now, the Housing Development Agency, that's a new key to the block. We felt that it should not take over housing function from other spheres of government, that is the municipalities and provinces. It has been set and designed in such a way that it provides sort of energy, as it were, on those key priorities that may be determined by a province or a municipality and the need development agency to help. The primary object of the agency is to acquire land, because land is a very critical component of housing delivery, to hold land, not on its behalf, but on behalf of state, either municipality or the province or nation, but to hold that land for the purposes of human settlement housing. And to target land that is well located, which will not disadvantage the poor and the middle income groups to access, to be closer to areas of work and so forth. So that's really their mandate. And of course, in the process of development, to use that land to sort of get other players, like the private sector, to invest there, so they can use that land as a catalyst for development. Light industry, resources, blocks, and so forth, but in an integrated human settlement area. So it is intended for that. Now, in relation to other agencies which are of financial nature, excluding the NHPRC, we are looking at the having reviewed, and I think after that review process is concluded, they are likely to be matched. Those which are providing finance and user finance are likely to be matched and then be given a new mandate, particularly within the context of this rather very gloomy economic situation where many people are losing their houses, particularly the low-income groups. Because the assignment of functions and help, I think in 2004, a government published a policy named Comprehensive Plan for Creation of Integrated Human Settlement. And I think that plan envisioned a situation where a settlement would have all these other components and necessary to make the lives of the inhabitants in that settlement better. But the plan also took into account that some of the functions necessary to realize that objective do not necessarily rest with housing there, but they rest with other departments. And therefore it was crafted in such a way that it laid as a platform where other players could be led into talking to what the plan is to achieve and so forth. So it was a great plan, and I think it's still the best plan. But because of your dependence to the benevolent of others to invest in your plan, so you didn't have a very strong, should I say, not appeal necessarily, but taking and successful development of housing. And of course, there were issues. So some of the key elements that should make that plan to be meaningful were housed in the department of ETLG then, and others with treasury, the neighborhood fund, Land Use Administration is somewhere in the Department of Land Affairs, Estate Agency is somewhere in the Department of Land. They are all over scattered. Education deals with the school somewhere. Health is concerned about, they are all over the place. Now, the dream is there. There is a need to create sustainable human settlement. But we could not at that time and say that we'll be so irresponsible because functions are everywhere. Now, what a new name and new configurations of other departments
What seems to be clear as we are working with my team, what seems to be clear is that this department is going to be the largest social expenditure in terms of infrastructure in the country. But of course it's going to take some time because, for instance, the president has declared that sanitation is coming to this department. Now, sanitation is embedded in the water legislation. Is it possible to separate, as my colleague will always say, to separate sanitation from water? And these are the questions that we've got to answer. The Minister, Deputy Minister, urged us that we should bring a proposal very soon so that it is taken to Cabinet to sort this thing out. But of course, the treasurer is saying to us that, you know, Nick, it's actually your function. Now, are the plans that are there we can make rather than now to a new manager of this department and so forth? So, here's the name, but the scope has been broadened. And I think we need to appreciate that. And the broadening of the scope requires us to do more to realize integrated human settlement. We are also looking at the review of the policy itself. BNG, we call it BNG is a cliche, but it's a comprehensive plan for creation of sustainable human settlement. And we need to test this norm. That's to make sure, that will make sure that we alone are responsible on these key functions. And others, of course, we can ask, as the Minister has said already, we don't have to take all other functions, but we can actually develop non-state standard and ask those hosting departments to continue hosting, but do what we want to do where settlements have to be created. Obviously, we've got to work with municipalities and provinces. We are planning machinery must be up to speed in order to make sure that we meet the goal of dealing with the informal settlements by 2014. So it's not only the name, but it is really more profound in terms of what needs to constitute that name. The measurement of price in some of settlements and price. I think Mr. Steen was correct. Fundamentally, throughout the country, all municipalities do have bylaws that must govern planning and so forth, where people should have or not to be. But it is equally true that throughout the countries, these bylaws will only be applied in a former black township, I mean in a former white area. And there is that thing, whether it is subconscious or not, is a challenge. Now what we seek to do when we ask a KZN to pilot this legislation, we seek to enhance at a theoretical level the capacity of the province to create, to have a tool that it can use to help municipalities, particularly those which are weak, to enforce laws that will regulate this mushrooming of informal settlements. And of course, we are aware that this mushrooming is really a function of economics. And we would like to have a law or laws that punishes the poor. But we want to have laws that will also force municipalities, if they don't have plans ready, but they should create areas where people could live, even if it's in a temporary, even if it's an informal settlement area, but one run and regulated informal settlement. And they must also provide plans as to what it is that they're going to do to phase them out. So we want to provide that leeway to provinces to have a tool that they can use to regulate that. Price has got another function, and its function really is to protect the poor against unscrupulous landowners and property owners and so forth. But this one will have a slight sort of take on the whole issue of the mushrooming of informal settlement. But again, it is not the intention of government to punish the poor. No country in the world that has been successfully able to stop mushrooming of informality. Because this is the function of economics. Where you've got gaps in your economy, you will continue to have this problem. It's a challenge across the world. But it has got to be managed humanly but appropriately. And then this thing can be provided to those who are in those areas. We Mr. Tim managed to raise the issue about the impact of housing. Mr. Steen, there are some indications that show that housing delivered over the last 15 years have had a tremendous impact in the lives of people. Moving from protection of people against elements, be it weather, rain or what, to providing security of tenure, something that was not existent before, it has had impact to deal with the asset poverty through the security, through the title deeds and so forth. So there are positive spin-offs. But again, your point is relevant, and I want to assure you that we are now commissioning a study that is looking at, broadly speaking, in terms of social cohesion that Mr. Shabala spoke about. What is it that we can say in empirical manner it has been a contribution of housing over the last 15 years? Because that is very critical. And I'm sure when that study is done, concluded, we'll share that with the committee and say that how has been the contribution of housing, for instance, in creating stability, reducing class? How has been the contribution of housing in creating social cohesion, and so forth and so forth? I'm sure we'll be able to because of the range of factors that will be looked at or tested, there are several of them. And it may very well be that the study will say nothing. We haven't done that much. But we'll share with the committee this very important work. We obviously we will be linking with the Office of the Presidency, monitoring and evaluation. Obviously, as one department, as one of the government departments, we will be linking with the Office of the Presidency, particularly the Office of the Minister, Reverend Manuel, in terms of planning. So there's no clarity as yet, but I can imagine where I sit from planning point of view. We are primary source collectors of data, and we do have data, and I'm sure we'll be sharing that with that. And I'm sure we will be really looking more at the macro level, I think so, but we were looking more at the micro, and we'll be feeding, and we'll be subjected to the same evaluation and monitoring like all other government departments, including spheres of government, other spheres of government. Occupation audit, we are able to give you at this stage the information on that, but we can make that available to you if it's ready. Yes, I have taken note of your comment on government banking awards. I'm sure we need to do more. If indeed there is gap in terms of our evaluation of contractors and service providers, hopefully I'll take this back to my team and make sure that as they are beginning to interview different developers and contractors, they should really spot extraordinary contribution of people, not those who really are doing, really doing what they are expected. We take note of your comments. Mr. Payne, carbon footprint. I think the minister must take a lead on this one and commit departments that for every trip we take by a plane, each one of the officials involved shall plant three trees. I think that would be a very nice campaign. I do have a very big team because we spend the whole week here, and you can imagine each one of us planting a tree to really demonstrate to everybody that we are concerned about the environment. But I know that the Minister and the Deputy Minister, largely, Mr. Ross says, they raise the issue that no new house we build should not have trees. And I'm sure there will be some announcements either you know by a speech or later on this issue. But from ourselves as officials, we may need to consider, not by the minister, that every trip we take, we shall plant a tree. Which is, so thank you very much for the suggestion. The consumer education, we've been running consumer education for a period of time. From 2007, around November, so we ran a TV series we called the BNG, which focused on a number of issues related to housing.
We have been running radio programs through all main stations, and we had a program which called Arachem Zanzi, Let's Build South Africa, in different languages. We have had billboards, we have run some competitions in some of these, you know, raising issues not only on the rights and responsibilities of beneficiaries of our housing programs, but also what it is that individuals can do to protect themselves against this bad economic situation. We have other programs such as the one that you referred to, where which is really more of a play. But I agree with you, if I'm called to go and watch a theater and I don't know the rationale, it doesn't make sense. We will improve on that. And I'm sure in this financial year, towards the September, October, we will relaunch DLG because it's very critical to educate people as to how they should manage their bonds. But thank you very much for your concern, and I will improve, I promise.
Do you want to deal with other issues?
I think that, the Shwa is the police of farm workers and military veterans.
Thank you, Didi. Let me say, indeed, in respect of the Social Housing Regulatory Authority, the legislation was passed very late in the financial year. However, it is let me just enhance that. From the Portfolio Committee on Housing, the legislation went into NCOP, which undertook its own public consultations, which were protracted. And the legislation was only passed much late. In fact, if my recollection serves me well, it was around November last year. And therefore, the operationalization of the regulatory authority is what we could start with earnest only once the legislation was in place. Obviously, the business case is there, the plans are there. It was also essential to align that establishment with the closure of Social Housing Foundation, so that some of the functions that the Social Housing Foundation is undertaking are not stranded or lost. That is why we are saying, Madam Chair, that the plan is to conclude the operationalization of the regulatory authority in this financial year. The budget that has been there has been there for the last 3 years. Every year there's been an allocation, and every year that allocation has had to be redirected or environment applied so that it's used through the Social Housing Foundation. So because of the delay in the finalization of the Act, we were getting a little uncertain as to when that legislation will pass. But we are certainly pursuing the conclusion of the establishment in this financial year. We will be approaching the committee to appraise the committee in respect of our international relations program, the agreements that are there, and so forth. We have already received a request from the committee, and that becomes one of the priorities that we'll pursue. In the same way that the committee has requested some of the policy enhancements, I'm sure we will negotiate space with the committee to be able to brief the committee in a fair amount of detail in that regard. The effort, the priority projects that are there, yes, we listed a few, the three, what I would call, juicy ones. Indeed, there are several other priority projects in various other provinces. The the reality being that what we're seeking to do with those projects, and we can provide, again, a detailed report in respect of what are the projects, what's the intention, and so forth, really was simply to spearhead the application of the new approach to human settlements, and therefore those projects are there. We will favor the committee with that. The last issue relates to the housing cover for military veterans. Right. The policy has been finalized. That's on the one side, in which case the prioritization of the military veterans that are registered on the database provided by the Defense Department are then prioritized to benefit. That's on the one side. On the other side, the veterans have come back to government to register additional requirements, which are currently being processed and negotiated, because they go beyond the scope of the department and therefore require a wider government response to the concerns of the military veterans. At the moment, the priority is to focus on the most vulnerable of the military veterans. That's by agreement, and therefore the various provincial structures are providing those databases around which the most vulnerable can then be dealt with immediately, while the bigger concern can then be processed over time. That is the approach. Obviously, there are issues of affordability in terms of the budget that the sector has and so forth, but the policy framework is in place in that regard. Gigi, I think that's all the balance of the question.
Yes, thank you very much, Gigi. I think I'll take three hands. It's Honorable Chairman, Honorable Honorable Bula, Honorable Dali, Honorable Bosa, and lastly, Honorable Stein. I would like to ask the members, because they have got a time constraint, but still going to have a very interesting presentation on budget, and we still have a briefing session about the housing institutions that are about to close. So let's try our best. I'm not a chairperson or unfair, but I would like the members to also cooperate with me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Since this is our second one, I'll also be very brief. I just wanted to raise this in the previous 2 days, and that is on the job creation. I feel that as a department, we need to have a target of the jobs that we are creating to fit in with our president's target. And that gives us a December 1 and a 2014. And I think that we need to have that. That's something we can easily monitor.
Thank
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I also wanted to inquire about the role of the youth that will play in job creation. Chair, the other area that I was concerned about is the issue of the Housing Development Agency. I now hear the prime mandate of this agency. I wanted to quote a scenario. In the instance where you have informal settlements, have been placed there for a number of years, and then you have the constraints of not having a willing buyer and willing seller to identify land, and you have to pursue the expropriation route, what role can the agency play in bringing land available for such development? Secondly, Chair, the issue of the enhanced extended discount benefit. After this takes place, a huge amount of debt is still carried over. Is there any mind in coming out with a debt forgiveness policy? That was a very light one. But thirdly, the issue of rental housing. In view that government will want to dispose of the rental housing stock, the other constraint is the issue of indigency. What kind of subsidies are possible for the indigent subsidies? Thank you, Jay.
Maybe you have answered the question that I don't know. But I want to start with the first thing. And the first thing for me is what I talked about yesterday, that the quality of houses that are being built is very poor, extremely poor. They are not fit in fact for human habitation. They're even worse when now you're going to have a that poor house standing there and that so-called VIP joint standing there, which is denigrating. It is I'm sure I don't know. I wonder when you plan it. Do you plan it for Africans? Or you plan it for South Africans? And I only hope that with the human settlement being introduced, such houses and that so-called VIP toilet will not be included, or is not included in this human settlement. Why is it so good? Thank you.
Coming back to the veterans, the houses that are going to be provided to veterans, I hope I'll be provided also the house. I hope I'll be provided. I've seen one of the houses, I don't know if it was built by who built it, but it is poor as the houses that have been provided. But I don't know whether it was a donation from some organization or what. One comrade in Wamashu, we were together in the army. He was given that house. He was thankful because he said that I never had a house in my life. But it's the same type of house that I'm saying they extremely bad. And please, if you build houses for veterans, at least build something for some that will make them respectable. Something that will make them say, my contribution in the struggle for the liberation of this country was not in vain. Somebody is going to be proud of. Thank you.
Thank you, Tata.
Thank you, Chef. Let me start by congratulating the Deputy Minister on her appointment as Deputy Minister, and having had all the experience of being the chair of this committee. Thank you. I've got three questions, really. One is around the issue of informal settlement. Government has made an undertaking that by 2014, informal settlement will be eradicated.
The question I would ask is, given the new expanded role of the department, is there going to be a closer working relationship between the department and the Department of Foreign Affairs and other and the police in terms of ensuring and maintaining or rather avoiding the growth of these informal settlements? Because wherever I have monitored government building new houses next to an informal settlement with the intent to eradicate informal settlements, I have seen no death. In spite of the number of houses having doubled or more than doubled originally, but you see no death on the actual informal settlement that was originally there. So what is government going to do to deal with this situation? The planning function. I hear, I think the DG or Joseph talk about some of the functions will now come to the department, the planning, coordination of infrastructure, and so forth. My little knowledge in this field is that one of the frustrations that the department faces is that this function belongs elsewhere, and the department is supposed to ensure good delivery of houses. And the reality is that when it comes to rezoning, a function which I think to a degree the HDA is supposed to play some role on, is belongs to municipalities. The planning function, and I'm talking at the micro level, belongs to municipalities. And the department comes to the to Parliament with budgets, projecting that they are going to build X number of houses during the course of this year. But they have no control over the process that leads to the actual building of the unit. Hence, every year you find budgets coming back to Treasury because they have not been implemented. Now, how are you going to deal with this in terms of the relationship between the National Department of Housing and the Planning Department, and also, of course, looking at the expanded role of the new Department of Cooperative Governance? Because for me, the three departments are going to have to work together to facilitate this. Otherwise, you're going to continue to have budget understanding in every province every year, because when they plan, in my understanding, is that they are not planning on the basis of land already zoned. And they are planning on the basis of a wish list. And is there an attempt, is there something that the department is looking at in terms of addressing? Maybe I should stop there. Before I stop, can I make a declaration right here that I happen to be in the board of SEPCOT, which is going to be discussed later. So I just want to declare that if you want me to be fired at this stage, I can walk out at that point. But I sit in that board once it is being wound down.
Thank you very much, Sada. Honorable
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to be equally brief similar to my second bucket, Chair. What I want to ask the department, and it goes around this sustainability and recent allegations, I must say, that the department has been negligent in registering projects over the last 10 years. And very specifically, that the 8,000 odd units in Cosmos City, which is supposed to be one of our flagship projects in terms of, you know, sustainable integrated human settlement, that the entire 8,000 subsidized units have in fact been rejected by NHBRC.
Thank you. Oh, what will you be?
Maybe I should start with Mr. Stern. Mr. Stern, I think you did write a question on this. Should I answer this question and therefore not
submit everything.
But I think it is also in the interest of the committee.
Of course. Chair, there have been challenges, broadly speaking, and I think my colleague will talk about those in relation to the registration of a project by NHBRC. On the one hand, it's a function of lack of enough inspectors in the built environment. There have been instances where I had to travel with the CEO of that company trying to recruit other leisure people in the built environment in countries such as Cuba and so forth, Spain and so forth. And now we have been accused of making too much noise about lack of expertise in the built environment, but it's a reality. And when it hits you in the face, it results in the poor quality houses that Honorable Jerry spoke about. But we are dealing with that matter. Hence, I spoke about what we are doing in terms of the monitoring and evaluation. We will be training inspectors, about 90 or 120 of them, with one company that has agreed to partner with us. And those inspectors are going to be located within the provinces, accounting to the National Department of Housing. So this is part of making sure that there is a really ensure quality and quality houses. Only countries that succeeded to build mass quality houses were those in Europe after the Second World War. Most of those are still standing. We, on this side, we end up with many unscrupulous developers who, for them, mass housing provide opportunity for quick cash. You are quite aware of that. And I am sure, Chairperson, at the appropriate time, if you want and your committee wants to make a presentation on what is it that we are doing to have those people arrested, I'm sure you'll be shocked at how far we've done in trying to deal with that situation. So on the one hand, we're trying to rebuild those houses, because surely, Mr. Honorable Mr. is correct, we cannot allow a situation where our people occupy poor houses. But on the other hand, we're investigating these developers. On the SIU, we have signed an agreement, as we did with government officials who acquired subsidies illegally. We are doing them, we are following up on the developers and contractors. We are doing the same thing that we did with lawyers stole money from housing, and we have them arrested. So we really mean it when we say that we are clearing a housing delivery value chain to the best of our ability. Your question will be substantially answered in relation to, for instance, Cosmo, but I know that there were issues between NHGRC and the housing government, and I was part of some of the discussions to resolve some of the misunderstandings, but my colleague here will deal with that. Honorable Brother, yes, I agree with you. We must find a way of really monitoring job creation arising out of housing. Based on units that have been produced on an annual basis, we can actually forecast project as to how many jobs that have been created. We can tell you that a unit, to put up a unit, you need 8 people, therefore, we can do that. But I understand you to be saying that you need more than calculating and then, unit build and therefore dividing with people that have been. So we'll do more to really show that housing does contribute to job creation. So that then we need to rise to the call by the president, particularly in this economic situation, environment that we find ourselves in. The youth build is a problem that we have on an annual basis. We have women build, we have women build, youth build, and so forth. This is really to encourage as broad as possible people in our country to participate in building houses for others and for themselves. And there's an element of skills and development, but it also has an element of, you know, increasing number of houses that we are building. It is really more to mobilize society around a housing development program. The HDA and land, I'm sure, Mr. you will deal with that question of the HDA and land, and Mr. Zabazo will deal with the issue about on the enhanced discount benefit. We are waiting on the rental housing for the poor. Definitely, we are looking at that because we are mindful of the fact that social housing, as it is, provide for people who are between 3,000, the households that which is incomes between 3,500 to 7,500. So there are many other people whose income is below that, who would prefer rental stock than a giveaway house and or a bonded house. We are working on that. I'm not sure we can actually reflect on what it is that is on the pipeline in relation to that. I spoke about the quality of housing, and I think it is correct said that there have been times when our developers and contractors provided quality housing. It is at a time when all of us relied on both municipalities and provinces to provide oversight and ensure that proper inspection is done. But since we are aware that this is not been happening as expected, we are stepping in. Units that are in poor conditions are not as many, but obviously where we found them, they are very bad. What we have also been doing is to provide rectification. Where we find that people were given poor quality houses, we have allowed provinces to use housing grant to rectify those houses. But again, the second layer of our approach is to have the culprits arrested or to get the money back. Mr. Vanda, Mr. Vanda used to be my teacher in India. Almost 20 years ago. he was my teacher in India in the UK. the issue about to do away with the informal settlement by 2014. When this eradication term was quenched, we had in mind, after the BNG was approved, and one of the business plans of the BNG talked to the eradication of the informal settlement. So we had in mind a massive program that will ensure that you create service sites as your first phase of building houses, and of course, be followed by substructure. How can you do that successfully? We had that in mind. But then we are also mindful of the other factors which we don't have control over. One of those factors is the migration, and I want to emphasize, we refer to internal migration. Migration of people from, for instance, Free State, where I come from, to Johannesburg or Gauteng, because there are more job opportunities in Gauteng than they are in Bloemfontein or Bethlehem or what. So we do have this migration from poor provinces to richer provinces, but we also have internal migration in provinces where people will move from the small villages to bigger, the secondary cities and metros because of many reasons, but largely it's economic reasons. And of course, access to services. Thereby, of course, putting more pressure on municipal services and land and so forth. So we are mindful of that, and there were discussions about creating a legislation that will help to cap mushrooms of informal settlements. It is intended to do that. But then the legislation, as I said, must also force municipalities to be proactive in terms of planning. It should be possible for any municipality in the country to say, in terms of our social plan, our town is going this way, and therefore make provision to put land aside, to do EIAs, to put in bulk infrastructure and so forth, in anticipation of the growth of their area. And you're right, Mr. Bosa, largely what municipalities or some municipalities will do, they react to mushrooming informal settlement, and their response is to just identify land, look where that informal settlement is, and then start building, a greenfield development, where sometimes there will not be sanitation, there will not be water, and so forth. It is really a function of planning and our emphasis on top of the key priorities that we identified. That is, planning is one of them, and we think that with the new name, at least we can talk of authority in terms of some of the issues related to planning. But again, we need other spheres of government, the departments, to play their role to help us to reach that goal. Yes, I will allow my colleagues to make remarks. I don't know whether we will talk at this stage.
Thank you, Dean. Madam Chair, the matter that has been raised about the Cosmo City, the enrollment and the claims made in the media and so forth, I suppose we would want to, in the same way that the DG has acknowledged some of the permutations of the challenges in the sector, we also ought to be very careful in that the quality assurance in the country is not only reliant on the NHBRC. The municipality, in terms of the national building standards and regulations, is the custodian of built environment in its area. That's on the one level. The provinces who commission these projects undertake those inspections. And lastly, the NHBRC undertakes further inspections specifically in respect of the enrollments that are linked to the warranty cover. Now, the contestation between the Gauteng provincial government and the NHBRC is not an outright collapse of cooperative governance, as the media sought to support, but rather, in the enrollment process, there is provision that houses need to be enrolled, and that process is quite specific. However, in the case of Cosmo City, while the project overall is enrolled, it was the individual units where there was contestation between the developer as well as the NHBRC, which contestation was primarily around the stages of enrollment, or rather inspections. Several inspections have to be undertaken on enrolled homes. Now, those contestations, by the way, happen across the residential development market. They are not isolated to the subsidy or the Cosmo City, and primarily because there are these technical contestations between an engineer on site and the engineer from the NHBRC. Again, where you find that one engineer is of the view that certain inspections are superfluous and therefore delaying the progress on the project and therefore loading up the costs. So those conversations, and I suppose we would have to appreciate the media report in that light. Of course, there are other motives, but the reality is that the
the contestations were primarily around the number of inspections and the timing of those inspections, and not so much the enrollment of the project. And again, the province since then has been sitting with the NHBRC up front to determine the sequencing, the timing of those inspections on the enrolled project. And therefore, the what we will do and what we are looking into is to then provide for a seamless quality control, quality management across the three different agencies that I outlined. Hence, the Director General spoke about the inspectorate that we are seeking to introduce. The last matter here that relates to, as the DG spoke extensively about the planning question, I think that is a fundamental problem. We are phasing out, or rather increasingly winning, the battle of under expenditure in respect of funds being returned and so forth, in that we are able now to sit with every province once a year before the beginning of the financial year and begin to plan which projects, where, when, what is the level of readiness, what are the risks associated with those projects, and therefore our program of support is then aligned with those risks as isolated. But also our shift to the multi-year planning regime ensures that we have a multi-year land assembly project packaging process in place to avoid those known problems, because most of those planning failures can be avoided, and we know that. Just lastly, from myself, there was one question around the interventions in the sector. They are not necessarily regulatory. We do believe that with better planning, you get greater predictability for the sector, but also you are able to package and contract better around your project. If you look at projects such as the Caltrain, the material supply was negotiated a while back, and therefore the pricing in that regard is predictable. It is very challenging to plan in this year and then in the middle of the year be hit with a 25% escalation in prices. It defeats planning. Therefore, we are seeking to attend to those. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, there was a question that DJ referred to me on the enhanced discount benefit scheme and the issue of debt forgiveness. Perhaps in a lighter note, I may say that the discount, the enhanced discount benefit scheme, which is the second version of a reviewed policy position, is based on debt forgiveness as its basic tenet. Perhaps what has been happening over time is to review it and see to what extent as the enhancements that are put in place beginning to encourage the next level of people who are able to qualify for this. The reality is that you have to balance the issue of the main program, which is a subsidy program for the poor, enhanced with the affordable housing program, with equity, because there is a need for that. Some of the properties involved here in this particular one, if you were to go at market price today, I am told, can exceed $1 million, $1.2 million. Particularly with the improvements, because some of those properties were bigger properties depending on when they were allocated. The reality is that the discount benefit scheme says we will discount it to this, up to the extent that we discount for the poor people, recognize that we might have been poor then. But the reality is that then you can't make profit out of government. And that is, those are the kinds of ones of properties that are now challenging. We are doing another review to look at what is the next step to encourage the balance. But we believe that largely we may have to do much more communication and communication with affected parties and educate them about what government is planning to do with regard to those, because to a large extent also some of them become a burden to government, because if the ownership depending on the sale arrangement, some of which were suspended sale arrangements, and therefore if the person decides they're not paying the electricity and rates, then the government ends up having to put part of those. And those are just adding unnecessary burden to government instead of those people. So we may look at how do we deal with it in that regard. But we believe that the issue of equity cannot be sacrificed in this case. I think if they are rich people, maybe the normal processes out there in the market should be applied, some of which may not be necessarily favorable. But I think the issue is we need to educate and balance the responsibility of the owner and the responsibility and contributions by government. So I think over time we'll find the next after the work is done on the has been done on the review of the success of the current program to see what proposals we'll put in place, including the issues that are raised. Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think the DG and the DGs have responded to questions adequately. The issue that I wanted to put across was the issue of the empty toilets raised by the current Bangunchan. The Digital Dance Department is facing right now the provision of the IP toilets, especially in the rural areas where there's no water. So the alternative is a bucket system with the VIP. But that engagement can be continued to check what is other better alternatives than the VIP. But at the same time, I don't think you would like to see bucket system being provided to our people there. But in the big light scenes, as they are at the moment, we want to improve that quality to ensure that at least people have decent usage of what is needed, the hour of need. And so far, in terms of provision of toilets, the IT is done by the water and sanitation. Not yet, that function is not yet coming through with the housing department as such. But as soon as that function comes to us, we'll be able to ensure we take communities along so there is a consensus of what type of decent toilet is being used for them. But at the moment, the IT is the only option that is available given the challenges of water. The other issues in terms of quality, in terms of housing, I think we've been straying in this committee while I was on that side on the issue of quality. And the moving away from the RDP to breaking new ground was the issue of addressing the quality in terms of the housing that was given to our people. And I'm sure we'll be attempting to ensure that we continue at that path. Unfortunately, some of the plans that have been done in provinces, it is was not those type of houses that have been built. But even so, we are saying that the major law can still be taken on board to improve all the houses that have been built for people to be given better houses. But that's engagement of provinces and municipalities with the people on the ground. But as the department, we must monitor to ensure that there is a movement to improve the quality of houses for our people in those areas. And lastly, we're moving away from giving even housing. Once you give people hope, hence the element of human being taught in it. Because at the end of the day, we do not see houses as people, the pendulum type of situation, but where people can have their livelihood, the trees, all the kind of amenities that are needed, your parks, your clinics, your schooling, the human settlement element, wherever we are, we should be able to promote that. And the department is purely to ensure that at the end of the day, we improve the quality of life of our people. I think I should stop at that. Otherwise, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I think we can pass on now for the next presentation.
Well, that sentiment is a bit difficult to find, especially with the special advice.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I will proceed. Insofar as the department's budget is concerned, the following will apply. The budget, total budget for the current financial year
roughly over 13.5 billion, right? In terms of the various programs as outlined earlier, the biggest program is Program 4 with development, rather housing development finance. But that is distorted by the grant, the housing grant that is sitting in that program, including the transfers to certain of the housing support institutions. Just under 200 million is sitting with administration. Policy is budgeted, provided for with 58 million. Housing planning and delivery support, which is a growing allocation, is 138 million. I already spoke about the program for housing development finance, and then the program 5, dealing with strategy, sector relations and governance, is 182 million. If we look at the grant, the conditional grant, the integrated housing and human settlement development grant, the baseline as outlined over the MTF provides for the 12.4 billion rand over this, in this current financial year, and depending on the conclusions from the revisions, given the economic situation, the MTF outlook may change somewhat. But we've allocated to each of the provinces according to an allocations formula negotiated, agreed with provinces, that Eastern Cape will get the appropriated amount, 1.3 billion, which is the fourth biggest allocation. Of course, the biggest is Gauteng, followed by KZN, Western Cape, and then the Northwest. What would be of significance is that the allocation is driven by a number of considerations in the formula. And I will not burden the committee at this stage with the provisions of that formula. Just going forward, we thought we would reflect on the performance of the sector in the last financial year, or rather the past financial years, to begin to demonstrate what we are buying with this housing grant. In the last financial year, that is the second last column, through the grant, we've been able to create 238,000 housing opportunities. Now, if you look at the trend in the past 5 years, the total output has been just under 1.2 million units. Now, we provide this to just demonstrate what we do, or rather what the grant does. If we look at what would have been planned, in particular, we can focus on this current financial year, that's the last table, last column. The plan is for the, if we aggregate all the provincial plans, just over 225,000 units. Somebody may hasten to say, but the grant is growing. Why fewer units? The quantum of the subsidy has gone up quite dramatically. Inflation pressures are there. The increase in the grant is not in keeping with the inflation and price escalation. It's really not. And therefore, the increase in the grant that we see merely cancel out those variations in terms of inflation and so forth. Now, Madam Chair, what we've done, again, is to demonstrate in terms of the plans that are there. We took each of the grant programs to isolate the top 5 budget items, just to give the committee a sense of what then the grant that is the 12.4 billion is going to do in this current financial year going forward. There's a grant, in terms of the grant framework, financial interventions, we can see that just over 2% of the total grant is going into what we call OPSCAP, Operational Capital Budget. That is to support and buy in additional capacity to supplement provincial performance. If we move down, the next grant framework program, incremental housing, we can see that 19% goes to project-linked subsidies, informal settlement upgrades, the next in line, just over 12%. Related to that is the top structure relating to integrated residential development program, just over 12% again, and so on and so on. If we move over to the other program, social and rental housing program, community residential units, which incorporate the upgrading or redevelopment of hostels, 7% of the budget goes there. And lastly, insofar as rural housing program, rural housing communal rights program, 12% of the total budget goes there. This begins to tell us, Madam Chair, that there is somewhat a fair balance between all the major interventions from and they can't necessarily be equal, but it begins to show you the sort of general trend in terms of the spread of the grant across different instruments through which we deliver houses. Madam Chair, I will stop there. That concludes the financial considerations. We took it that the members would have been favored with the estimate of the national expenditure for the vote, and therefore we opted to merely give the highlights in respect of the budget. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mashawan. I think it's time for questions, but I need a clarification on the issue of backyard rental program. What does that entail? Because I don't understand it. So, Honorable Members, I can't see the hands off. Mr. Stein, Mr. Borta.
Chair, just a small question. if you can explain, Mr. Samana, can explain the answer.
Okay.
The informal settlement upgrading, what does that really mean? Is that the insecure upgrading? Is that providing electricity, water, and sanitation to those informal settlements?
Okay. Another thing?
Okay.
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 Thank you, Chairperson. Just allow me to tell the DG that I don't believe he's answered my question, earlier question about NHBRC, so I expect a written answer. In terms of the budget, Chairperson, I'm looking at the division between provinces, and that concerns me, and you will recall that just over 500 million, half a billion rand, was transferred back from the Eastern Cape late last year. So I've got two questions related to that. The one is, I accept that formula that is applied, but can we not, and can you not make representation to Treasury perhaps in that regard, that a sort of a variable can be applied after that formula is applied that will balance out in terms of capacity? Because we're actually not giving the provinces any motivation to do better than what they are getting. And other provinces, again, know that that is their budget in terms of the formula, and they don't necessarily have to deliver. So it's something that we should take up as well in Parliament with our economic crisis. And I do know there is some legislation in the pipeline whereby we can make adjustments to budget. But from your side, if you can take that up. Then it brings me to the second leg of the question in terms of the Eastern Cape. How do they manage them? And I know that you've got a team there assisting them. but to more than double their delivery. Taking into account the problems that they had towards the end of last year, so that's the one question then. And Joseph, you can name me. You don't have to say somebody would hasten to ask. I normally ask the question. The budget goes up, but the number of houses delivered goes down. I'm still going to ask the question in terms of the new budget, because the budget increases by approximately 24% in nominal terms. Are you therefore telling me that the your reason is that the grant, the subsidy increases, so you know you're going to get the same number of houses irrespective if the money goes up? I would hasten to add from my side that, although I don't know, that the subsidy is certainly not going to increase by 24% in nominal terms. So my question at some point, and probably during the budget debate, is going to be repeated. Unless you can tell me that the subsidy is going to be increased by 24%. Say, Chairperson, just lastly, and again the Deputy Minister will support us here. This committee has been very vocal in terms of consultants. And in terms of the current budget, professional services has gone up by 55% in real terms. Now, we wanted to come down and not go up because we're not building any skills and we're not transferring skills in from consultants when we do employ them. Thank you.
There is a common term normally used by the department and others when wanting to improve the situation within a specialty informal settlement. You know, this term is called relocation. Relocation as a term is very much, you know, frustrating the informal settlement. Yes, many times. Probably because they don't understand clearly what it means, but their interpretation in most cases is emphasizing more on forced removal, because there is quite little, if any, element of engagement with the informal settlement. If relocation remains part of improving, you know, the living conditions of the informal settlement, of course, is it within the informal settlement upgrading? That's the question I want to ask.
I will only deal with one question, and my colleagues will deal with the rest. Yes, Honourable Member, it is within the context of informal settlement upgrading. But just to put a context to relocation, you have a community that decides to occupy a piece of land. Again, because of economic factors, for the urban space, but also because of the shrinking household formation in the urban space itself. And then they decide that, well, we are going to start our own settlement here. The children drive in, put them in Kukulapo, and of course the church doesn't do anything about that until after 6 months. It starts raining. And we find that these people are below water level. It's a disaster. Obviously, government cannot turn around and say that, but we told them that the responsibility of government is to make sure that people are better settled in good portions of land. That's one example. The other example is where people decide that they form
their settlements under the big electric pylons. We all know that what are the consequences of that. For them, for instance, a land has been set aside to build houses, they occupy that forcefully. Now, I think there are two seminal court cases, results of court cases, a continual court. One, focusing on the Abacha University Journal, in terms of the QKZN's plans to start a legislation to control mushroom loss informal settlement, which will support the National Department of Housing. But the second one is what happened yesterday, and which is seminal about what happened yesterday is, for the first time, the Constitutional Court went further even to determine the type of temporary accommodation that the state government, that is all spheres of government, must provide for people who are relocated. On the one hand, the court is saying that yes, people can be relocated, but they have got to be engaged with your right. On the other hand, the court is saying that but as they relocated, they must be in well-located land. Court doesn't extend to say that for your global phase two residents in particular, we must actually put tight rooms in our temporary areas. So I think it has always been the position of government that we don't want this government to be seen to be implementing draconian laws of the past where people have been forced. What should be an issue at all material times is the engagement part of that. That is very critical. But where people's lives can be in danger or are in danger, I'm sure the honorable members agree that there should come a time when the state must act. You are living below water level, when it floods, you lose your properties and so forth.